Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Lemonada. A warning to listeners. This episode contains descriptions of injuries from a car accident that some may find distressing.
A warning to our audience. This episode contains references to suicidal ideation. If you or someone you know is suffering with their mental health, call the National Suicide Prevention Helpline at 1-800-662-HELP.
The last thing I really remember is my passenger being asleep.
On May 8, 2016, free skier Colby Stevenson was nearing the end of a 12-hour road trip from Mount Hood, Oregon to Park City, Utah, with his friend John Michael Fabrizi sleeping in the passenger seat.
I remember getting tired and buying a Starbucks triple shot of espresso at like maybe 9 or 10 p.m. We were only a few hours from home at that point. I remember the car ride, having a phone call with my dad, and he was like, "Yeah, like you shouldn't drive."
Here's Colby's dad.
I said, "Get a hotel, Colby. I'll pay for your hotel always. You know, don't try to do 12 hours after skiing all day."
He was like, "Yeah, like you shouldn't drive."
But Colby didn't want to get a hotel room. His passenger, John Michael, had gotten a knee injury earlier that day.
Anyone that's injured doesn't want to stay in a hotel. Would much rather just get home and get ready to recover.
So Colby kept driving through Idaho's dark, windy roads, and that's when it happened.
I just dozed off for like 2 seconds.
Here's Colby's friend, John Michael.
I remember getting woken up when we went over the tire massager on the side of the road. At that point, you know, I was startled and looked over and I was like, "Colby." We continued to veer off the highway. As I said his name, I think that he kind of woke up.
Once I was going off the road, I woke up and overcorrected. I was just in a really top-heavy old Ford Ranger.
The truck just basically high-sided and did like a flip and a half. So it missed coming down on the passenger side of the vehicle the first go around, which you can definitely tell by the photos.
Just boom, just rolled and the roof of the car crushed my skull and kind of ripped my forehead off from here all the way up.
By some miracle, like my phone actually just ended up in my lap after rolling, you know, who knows how many, probably a handful of times. And I had service. So like those two things were absolute blessing. Picked up the phone, dialed 911. At this point, I'm like looking over at Colby, you know, really doesn't look good at all.
Colby's memory goes in and out from this point forward.
I was unconscious for like 5 minutes and then I actually got out of the car and took a couple steps until the ambulance came and sat there.
Colby didn't know it yet, but his skull had just fractured into 48 pieces.
It was really bad. Like you could see his skull, you know, kind of blood covering his entire face and eyes and whatnot.
They called it degloving of the scalp, and that was pretty intense.
Up until that very moment, Colby was on top of the world. He had just come off winning the MVP award at the Mount Hood West Coast Session Camp. Before that, the young free skier was turning heads at competitions all around the world. Former X Games champion Tom Walsh called him, quote, "one of the most crazy talented kids I'd ever met," end quote. During the crash, John Michael suffered minor injuries, mostly to his elbow. But for Colby, the next 48 hours would be decisive. At that moment, there were more questions than answers, and the entire future of a promising 18-year-old skier hung in the balance.
There was definitely times where I thought, I wish I had died in the crash, and maybe I'd like, you know, gone out with a legacy or something, because I thought my life was just over at that time. You know, I just was like, just couldn't believe what had happened. It just seemed like a bad dream.
Hi, I'm NBCLX storyteller Ngozi Okelodo, and I'm joined by my co-host, Apollo Ono. He's Team USA's most decorated Winter Olympian, a best-selling author, and even a Dancing with the Stars champion.
Thank you, Ngozi. This is my new favorite Olympian, where we introduce you to some of the most inspiring members of Team USA, not just because of how they're dominating the competition, but because of what they're doing when the cameras are off. Colby's mom, Carol, had just arrived in Hawaii, ready for a storybook vacation.
It was in the middle of the night, and I got all these messages that came up on my cell phone, which is unusual at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
There wasn't much information in those text messages about what happened to Colby. Just bits and pieces her ex-husband, Bobby, had managed to piece together.
I had a message from a social worker from the hospital that informed me that Colby was in a serious accident and that he was at University Hospital and to be in touch, of course.
That's Bobby, Colby's dad. Bobby rushed to the hospital where he got more information.
He's undergoing major surgery. His head's swelling. Prospects aren't very good. We'll keep him on life support until you can get there.
Carol was confused. She had just talked to her son hours earlier.
He called me earlier in the day because it was Mother's Day. Hi, Mom. You're the best. Love you. I was with my then boyfriend, Jeff, who's now my husband. And he was, I guess, going to take that week we were there to propose. Little did I know. But anyway, I just said, hey, there's been a really bad accident and something really bad's happened. And we're going to have to go back to Utah right away.
And so began the longest flight of Carol's life. And that's saying a lot, considering she's a flight attendant.
It was very difficult to maintain composure, I guess, because, you know, you just feel so anxious and upset. I talked with Jeff, my now husband, and just said, look, I don't know what the state will be, but I know from other people's experiences that when we get there, no matter what his condition is, we have to maintain positivity. Because they can, no matter if they're conscious or not, they can feel how you feel. Like you can't stand there and go, ah!
As Carol made her way to Utah, taking flights from Molokai, Hawaii, to Honolulu, to San Francisco, to Salt Lake City, Bobby made his way to the hospital, where Colby was undergoing emergency surgery.
When he was in the operating room, we had thoughts of him not getting through. I just held to, you know, a positive belief that he was going to be out and recover. To some degree, we had no idea what degree, whether he'd, you know, be out on his own, be able to walk again, ski again. Yeah, it was all just anybody's guess.
Carol was told Colby would be in an induced coma by the time she got to the hospital.
We get to the room and he'd just, like, he'd been awake for maybe 30 minutes. Nurse was standing behind him and he had a really raspy voice because he'd been intubated and he looked terrible.
This is the only way Carol can describe it.
His head, I don't know if you know what Jiffy Pop is. It's a terrible comparison, but there's this little camping, it's a foil container. It has popcorn and you can pop it over a flame and it pops up really high. Well, his head looked like a Jiffy Pop. It was unnaturally swollen.
Carol didn't even have time to process this painful image of her son when something happened. Colby started talking.
He says, hi, Mom. Oh, yo, Jeff. I'm really sorry I ruined your vacation. But I'm really happy I didn't kill my friend, John Michael. And then the nurse behind him started bawling. We're trying to keep the tears from, you know, rolling down our faces. And here's this nurse bawling behind. I'm like, oh, it's okay, honey. We're happy to come back. We're so happy you're, you know, awake. And it was just one of those very unusual moments because they really didn't think he was going to wake up at all.
I honestly don't remember the moment of me waking up that much just because I was so drugged up.
What Colby does remember is the pain, the sharp shooting pain piercing through the painkillers.
My head was swollen like this big, I guess. Like I looked like an alien. I was so drugged out. Like I just remember like just my head hurting so much. You know, if you've ever broken a bone, you know how bad it hurts. And I shattered my skull in 30 places. So just kind of like, I can't believe this happened. You know, like one moment I was at the top of the world, like had the best 2 weeks of skiing in my life. And the next moment I was in the hospital.
Colby had suffered a traumatic brain injury, which can lead to seizures, memory loss, and in severe but all too common cases, brain damage.
So I'm in the 1% of people that have this type of skull fracture and no brain damage. My brain swelled 8 millimeters, and at 9 millimeters is when brain damage starts, and then it actually swelled back into place.
While there was no brain damage, Colby was still seeping in and out of consciousness, with doctors unsure how his cognitive and motor functions would be affected. Had he suffered memory loss, would he be able to maintain his balance? Would he be able to ski again?
I was really unsure that I was going to be able to ski the same ever again. I was having a lot of vertigo issues. Like every time I would lay down, I would just start spinning.
His parents wondered if he would be the same lively, rambunctious Colby again.
When it came time to go to the bathroom, he gets up with all the stuff. He goes, "Mom, I can't get this down. Can you help me with this little drawstring thing that's tied?" So I'm helping him. And he's, you know, a little embarrassed, and he's getting his trousers down to use the toilet. And right at that moment, there's like a curtain instead of a door. And this cute little 18-year-old candy striper whips the curtain back like this and goes, "Oh." And he turns his head and says, "Can't you see this is the men's room now?" And she gets all red, right? Shuts the curtain. And it was like in that moment in time, he had humor.
The personality was there, but Colby was nowhere near ready to be released from the hospital. It would take a village to get him out. And some of that help came from an unlikely person.
I had an old architecture teacher, Jimmy Fleur, who would come over and just like read books to me and stuff when I was in the hospital.
I read a book to him. I found with people with traumatic brain injuries, if you read to them, their brain is swollen. And so as it comes down, but if they can continue hearing the auditory, their brain can start to reconnect and come back together.
That's Jimmy Fleur.
And so I just figured I would read to him nice and calm for about an hour till he fell asleep on me. I must have had a very boring monotone voice, but that slow, calm, I wanted to make sure that anything he could hear was helping him as best I could.
Jimmy would come to the hospital every day and read a book to Colby for at least an hour. And there was a very specific reason Jimmy was moved by his former student's accident enough to show up every single day.
When I was about 18, I was in a bad car accident, and I still have scars from it. So slippery road at night and a deer, and I veered off right into a tree.
Jimmy, who was also an avid skier, wanted to make sure Colby was seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
I didn't ski for a year. But once I got back on skis, it was like, oh, thank you. I'm back to being normal. With Colby, anything I said was positive, to see through the accident.
He was in a car wreck when he was younger, so he kind of related to it. And he was just a really positive person to have around, and you know, never doubted me.
Within 2 weeks, Colby would be discharged, allowed to go home to continue his months-long recovery there. And that's when the emotional battles began.
First couple nights he was home, he had really bad nightmares. And so he woke up screaming in the middle of the night. And I don't even remember getting down the stairs. And I can remember him saying that he felt that there was a bad presence that was trying to take him away in his nightmare. And, I held on to him and said that, you know, no matter what, nothing was going to happen to him. And he would ask me to just sit with him. I'd hold his hand and I'd sit with him until he could fall back asleep.
Within hours, Colby would be awakened to take painkillers. And then 4 hours later, and 4 hours after that.
Every time I'd look in a mirror, I would just kind of scream, like, disbelief. And the thought of not skiing again was also tearing apart at me.
It was really hard to watch him be in pain. He was very focused when he was bedridden on looking at his computer and just going over and over and over all of his videos, ski videos, tricks, anybody else's that he admired. I mean, he was almost all the time just focused on that. And I was worried that he wasn't going to be able to ski again.
Within weeks, though, Colby started walking around the house, then outside, then biking without any issues. Things were looking up. That's when they started noticing Colby's cognitive problems. Colby will never forget that day.
I couldn't remember my friends' names and, like, just really weird stuff.
Colby had decision-making problems. If you asked him what he wanted for breakfast, he didn't know.
He would resolve that by flipping a coin to decide what he wanted to eat. But there were concerns that his difficulty making decisions could threaten to dissolve any hope of returning to skiing. After all, skiing is a sport built on split-time decisions. In Colby's disciplines, slopestyle and big air, athletes execute high-flying flips and spins and must use their creativity and personalities to highlight their skills, often making split-second decisions at breakneck speeds. Delays in making any decision can mean serious, life-threatening injuries for an athlete. This was a concern for his doctors.
Is he going to have decision-making problems with, you know, his tricks? And I was like, I don't know.
5 months after the accident, Colby's coach called. Colby was being invited on a ski trip in New Zealand with Team USA athletes. He wouldn't compete, but his coach thought that was fertile ground to see if he could ski.
Colby wanted to go on this trip, and it was really an I don't know if he can ski, really. He'd been bicycling is all. But the doctor had said he could go back to skiing, and he was welcome to try.
Colby will never forget that day.
I was able to do my favorite trick on the first day. I did a double cork 1080 grabbing tail, and that's when I landed that, I knew I was going to come back.
He was pretty elated, and his coach was really the one that relayed it more than Colby. The coach called and said, why didn't we just put him in the competition? I was just like, what?
I think the culmination was when he won his first World Cup event, which was right after the accident that same year, or that same season. It was like, I got goosebumps when he did that, because that meant he was back. He was back in the game.
If hearing that gave you goosebumps too, it should. Colby's recovery and ability to go back to a rigorous pro athlete career just 5 months after an accident of his gravity is extremely uncommon.
I think the first thing I'd want to say is how amazing the brain is in general, and the brain's just remarkable capacity to heal and change in kind of conjunction with what's going on. Some people heal very well. The brain heals very well, and there are no lasting consequences.
That's Dr. Billy Schultz, a physician with the brain injury division at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota.
A traumatic brain injury is any type of disruption to the brain's normal function. And it has to, by definition, be traumatic in nature. It can't just be something that you have that's acquired. So a stroke wouldn't necessarily be a traumatic injury, despite the fact it changes the function of the brain. So motor vehicle collisions, falls are actually the number one cause of traumatic brain injuries in the United States. People think about motor vehicle collisions, but falls are much more common.
Remember what Colby said about being 1 millimeter away from brain damage? The line between mild impairment and permanent brain damage is different for everyone, but is usually very fine.
One of the things we see with a brain injury is there's the primary injury, so the actual insult to the brain, be it a motor vehicle collision, fall, etc. When somebody comes into the hospital, then the focus is on prevention of the secondary injuries, and that's where swelling gets in. And that's what all of the neurosurgeons and critical care neurologists and the whole team is doing in that immediate circumstance in the hospital, is watching for that. And depending on that swelling, they're usually monitoring the pressures in the brain and making that decision about, do we need to actually do surgery? Do we need to give medications to decrease that swelling? The more swelling, the worse. outcomes because the brain is stuck in the skull. There's only so much room for swelling to happen before it starts squeezing in other areas and causing more injury.
The thing with traumatic brain injuries is that even if you emerge without brain damage, the emotional and physical toll isn't any less pronounced.
There's a sense of grief that goes along with that sometimes, which is a very emotional response. We have people who can get very, very agitated after brain injuries. We have people who can have worsening of their depression or anxiety after brain injuries.
The effects of a traumatic brain injury can be long-lasting, which is why it's important to get checked out by a doctor if you notice any irregularities after an injury.
The first thing, if you are experiencing any neurologic changes, so if you are experiencing changes in vision, changes in sensation, changes in strength, changes in thinking, the most important thing is getting checked out by a medical professional. Anybody with a severe traumatic brain injury or a mild traumatic brain injury, we really want to see these people to provide them with the best medical care we can, education about their injury that we can, and rehabilitation to improve their function. The sooner the better.
Thankfully, modern medicine's understanding of the brain is much better than it was 20 years ago. And here's the finding that gets reinforced with every study.
The brain is just this remarkable organ, and it is constantly evolving and changing. Every time we learn something new, it's able to learn something new. And so when you have a brain injury, that doesn't change. The brain is able to continue to learn new things. Different parts of the brain continue to be able to take over that role. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to watch somebody recover the way they can after a traumatic brain injury.
And in Colby's case, those problems have finally subsided 5 years after the accident.
I would say I'm mostly 100%, besides maybe some decision-making problems, just very basic stuff. Now it's just like dealing with some neck pain from the crash.
There is one thing Colby did lose forever. The impact of the crash was so strong, Colby lost an inch of his height.
I think the initial impact is what crushed my side of the car and also crushed my head and neck. Because if you've ever seen a photo of the car, like the whole driver's side is like almost smushed all the way down to the steering wheel. And so that's where I was at 6'2". And so, yeah, it completely crushed my neck like an accordion, you know, just. And now I'm 6'1". And I'm not growing anymore.
One of the things Colby had to relearn was how to drive.
I had to actually do a driver's test again to get my license back. Just changed my perspective on driving in general. And it's scary out there on the roads and how distracted people are.
Colby, who is now 24 years old, may have lost an inch of height, but what he gained after the accident was immeasurable.
Once I was able to gain that back, you know, that drive and that determination to do well and to realize that I still had the abilities, it just made me want it that much more, because it's been my whole life of dream to just ski, you know, and just do that my whole life. So whether that be at a professional level or in any, you know, the best I can, almost having that ripped away made me even that much more determined to do well and that much more grateful to be able to travel the world and ski year round. It's more about enjoying the moment, enjoying the day.
Here's John Michael.
That really changed him, I think, for the better, and made him really focus and have the desire to dial in his craft. There's definitely just like the cliche of like you have a moment like that or a wake up call and you kind of realize like how precious and fragile, you know, your life is.
Colby and John Michael now treat May 8th, the day of the accident happened, as a holiday of sorts. Here's John Michael.
You get those little reminders on Instagram or Facebook where like the picture will pop up and it's like 4 or 5 or 6 years ago today. And it's just like a photo of just like absolute carnage. The whole truck is just obliterated.
The two friends get together and usually just ski.
That's a celebration of life day for me. Every year it's like, all right, let's do something fun. And you know, whether that be skiing, if you're in the right place, or just going outside and spending it with your friends or family, just celebrating my bonus years on this planet. Very easily I could be gone and and missed out on all this, these fun adventures.
May 8th is also the day my dad died. So that May 8th, you know, it was Mother's Day when he had his accident. May 8th was an anniversary. My dad's been gone for about 36 years. That May 8th date is something, even when Colby's not at home to celebrate it, we celebrate it. It's a miraculous day because he was not meant to leave this world on that day. And there might have been a little help up there.
Go back to the My New Favorite Olympian feed right now to check out previous episodes. While you're there, tap the subscribe button to get automatic downloads of My New Favorite Olympian for free.
My New Favorite Olympian was produced by NBCLX. Apollo Ono and I and Guzzi Akeledo were your hosts. Fernando Hurtado wrote and produced this episode. James Jeffrey edited it. Seth Rubenroyd and Fernando Hurtado were supervising producers. Jeremy Berg and Matt Goldberg served as executive producers. Tony Pierce was the motion graphics designer with support from Michael Katowski. Stephen Morello, Nina Lin, and Mackenzie Bame served as directors of photography. Stephen Dawson was the media manager and quality control editor. This broadcast is presented by the authority of the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form without the express written consent of the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee.